Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
Woo-wee! Are you off your adrenaline high yet, Scott? Wow. Wags here along with Scott Tobin here on the Toasted Tavern, and I think both of us are coming down from the high that was the weekend in sports. Holy cow, was that insane. We've got a ton of stuff to talk about tonight in every single genre of sports. We've got the NFL. We've got Major League Baseball. We've got the NHL. We've got college basketball. We've got it all. But first, man, it's been a couple weeks. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I can't scream like you just did because my voice is still recovering from yelling at the TV for two solid days. Yesterday and Saturday, but yeah, man, what an unbelievable weekend in sports. It's about as good as you get if you're a football fan. Other than that, doing pretty good. Come off a couple illnesses, as I know you have, over our little hiatus, but it's good to be back, and we got a lot of positive stuff to talk about tonight. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, we really do, and it's a little weird to be optimistic and positive, especially this time of year, because it's usually one of the most depressing times of year. It's post-Christmas, it's Valentine's Day, so you know some people are not as happy in this time of year, but the sports world is proving to rectify that situation, and we'll start off with football because that's the one that's the most immediate, that's the one that is really hitting home the most right now. Although the Blues are playing right now, intermission, 3-1 Calgary leads right now. We'll get into that and give you the updates as the second period gets underway, but we got to start with the championship games that are now set. We got to talk about this divisional round because, we all thought that, it was a lock solid that the Green Bay Packers were going to be in the Super Bowl. We thought, okay, maybe it'll probably be the Bucks facing them in the NFC Championship game. You're probably going to see the Titans and Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. And of all seasons for it to be a chalk postseason, it was going to be this one because the top four seeds were the top four seeds. First game on Saturday, Bengals and Titans. Interesting game, to say the least. It wasn't what I expected it to be. I did not expect it to be kind of as low scoring as it was. The Titans are coming off the bye. Not really sure how they're going to come out of that. Derrick Henry's getting his first game action in a very, very long time. So you think maybe the Titans were going to come out a little flat, potentially. The Bengals, same way. I mean, they had a great game last week against the Raiders, a game that maybe they shouldn't have won. It was a little controversial. But they ended up coming out and playing a really good game. And, the Bengals took out the Titans. They took out the number one seed in the AFC. And if we thought that was going to be the indication of what was to come, I think a lot of us would have started putting money on things, but we did not expect the weekend to go the way it did. But let's start off with that Titans-Bengals game. What about that game really put it into the Bengals' hands?
Well, it came down to the turnovers. The three turnovers were the difference in that game. But you talk about it being a low-scoring game, which you didn't really expect. You got to give the Titans a ton of credit. That Tennessee defense came out and played an amazing game. I mean, they, for the most part, kept Joe Burrow in check. They kept Chase in check. They really controlled the game on the defensive end. I mean, you sack Joe Burrow 9 times, you don't expect to lose that game. So their defense did a great job. They really limited the big plays for the Bengals offense, and they kept it close. And then, the offense for Tennessee just had some issues. I mean, Ryan Tannehill threw 3 interceptions, and people are like, oh, man, Ryan Tannehill's the reason they lost. But you got to remember that two of those passes, you can't completely blame on Ryan Tannehill because, the second one for sure was off the receiver's hand, bounced up in the air, and then it's a jump ball basically once that happens. So you can't blame that one on Tannehill. The third one, did he force that ball? Yeah, he did. He threw it into double coverage. But again, the receiver had his hands on it, and it went up in the air, and it gets tipped up, and, then anything can happen once that happens. The first interception was totally his fault, just a bad throw. He didn't see the linebacker drop back into coverage, just made a bad throw. But I'm not going to totally blame it on Ryan Tannehill because, those kind of things are going to happen. Like I said, you have tip passes, jump balls, basically. Anything's going to happen. I think we were all crazy to think that King Henry was going to come back after having, metal put in his ankle, what, 9 weeks ago? And then he was going to be the same guy. I mean, there were a couple of runs that he had where you're like, okay, there he is. But Cincinnati also knew that that was going to be Tennessee's game plan. And they stacked the box and they shut him down for the most part. He had 20 carries for 60 yards. So he really was, they really weren't able to run the ball. And, you know, those three interceptions, because other than that, I mean, Tannehill made a couple of unbelievable throws. He threw a touchdown to A.J. Brown in the end zone. That, I mean, Brown caught it one-handed. He didn't even have to move his hand. I mean, the ball just landed in his hand. And the defender was right there. I mean, Tannehill put it in an absolute perfect spot. So he made some really good throws. Julio Jones had a good game. It just came down to the three turnovers. And like I said, when tip balls go up in the air, anything can happen. And it just didn't fall in Tennessee's favor.
Yeah, it really didn't. And, you know, yeah, you look at the statistics only and you go, yeah, it was totally Ryan Tannehill's fault. He threw the three interceptions. That's the difference in the game. But really, I don't even know if it really was the difference in the game because it came down to a last second field goal. So it's not like, you know, the Bengals turned around and took those turnovers and really like ran away with the game. You know, the Titans were still in it. It was a 16-16 game. Bengals had the ball last, obviously. They went down and Evan Fitzpatrick kicks the game-winning field goal. And, you know, obviously, Bengals fans are going crazy because I'm pretty sure they drafted a kicker for that reason and that reason alone. But that's what ended up happening is, you know, the Titans just could not do enough at home to secure the win. And it just sits there and makes you kind of question a little bit on if the buys are something that teams actually do want to get. I mean, yes, it allowed them to have Derrick Henry back. It gave them an extra week of rest. But, you know, how many times have we seen a wild card team in not just football, but baseball and in other sports where they continue to play, they stay hot, and then they go on a run. And you know, maybe they don't make a championship run, or maybe they do make a championship run. You know, are those buys something that, you know, a team maybe doesn't necessarily fight too hard to get so that maybe they have some sort of repetition and flow going into another game?
You know, it's going to be a really interesting case in football because football is the one sport where in the past you've always said you want to fight for those top two seeds because you get the buys, you get the week off, you get healthy. You know, you can kind of work that out. The thing is now there's only one team getting that seed, so getting that bye. So everybody else is playing straight through the playoffs, you know, and so you're the only team that's taking that week off. So, yeah, it could disrupt you when it's just one team. You know, like I said, again, I think in a lot of ways it helped Tennessee because if they don't get that bye, then Derrick Henry probably would not have been able to play last week. So, I mean, it helps and hurts both. I think football is going to be an interesting case to watch over the next couple of years. And if the number one seeds keep continuously getting knocked out since they're the only team that gets the bye, then in 3 or 4 years, maybe that's something you look at and go, okay, maybe we need to change this again because it isn't really the advantage that it's supposed to be for those best teams. So I think it's just a case study that we're going to have to watch over the next couple of years.
It certainly is. And you look at the next game, the 49ers and Packers, that was a low scoring game as well. A 13-10 49ers victory. They knocked off the top seed as well in the NFC. So the top seed in each conference go down on Saturday. And it wasn't so much once again that the 49ers were dominating that game. I mean, the Packers were up 10-3 late into the fourth quarter. And it really came down to special teams play. You know, the blocked field goal, then a blocked punt that the 49ers ended up scoring a touchdown on, gets that game a 10-10 score. And eventually they get the ball last, go down, and Robbie Gould kicks the game-winning field goal, and the 49ers win. And that puts Aaron Rodgers at 0-4 against the 49ers in the playoffs, a team that he famously said he was going to essentially just destroy every time that they played and basically make them regret not drafting him. Is he regretting those words now?
A little bit, I think. A little bit. It's definitely come back to bite him. And that was the weirdest game, I think, of the weekend. Because, I mean, the Packers get that opening kickoff, and they march down the field. And they, I mean, easily went down the field. Just right down the field, march down, score that opening touchdown. And you're like, oh, man, where's San Francisco's defense? Well, they showed up after that. You know, the second drive, after that first drive, the Packers' offense basically did nothing. You know, and you can talk about the fact that it was a lot of it was on the Packers special teams. Like you said, you had the blocked punt, you had the blocked field goal. I mean, the 49ers didn't score an offensive touchdown in this game.
That's right.
You know, you have to point a finger at Aaron Rodgers. After that first drive, you go back and you watch the replays of those games. The third and fourth quarter, Rodgers just did not look like he was in the game. It looked like he had mentally checked out. It looked like he was done. And, you know, you can attribute some of that to the field conditions. I mean, it's not easy. You know, you're playing in 3-degree weather with, you know, zero wind chill. And it's snowing. And then that snow is hitting that field and melting. And basically you're basically playing on ice. You know, that fourth quarter, they were slipping and sliding all over the place in the fourth quarter trying to play that game. So the conditions had a lot to do with it. But, you know, you really have to question. And that's not this isn't the first time we've questioned Aaron Rodgers in a playoff game against the 49ers in the second half of a game where it's just seemed like they get down and he's like, oh, well, we're going to lose and I don't really care anymore. You know, I don't know. You know, if you're a Packer fan, I think you're a little bit frustrated. Well, I think you're worried because you're like, okay, what do we do next year? Is Aaron coming back? Do we want him to come back? You know, I mean, as an athlete, as a player with the talent that he has, the guy that was the MVP, you definitely want him to come back. But if he doesn't really want to be there, and if you saw his post-game press conference, didn't really sound like a guy that wanted to be in Green Bay next year. You know, then maybe you move on. You know, I've heard people say, oh, under no circumstances do you trade Aaron Rodgers. You tell him you either play here or you sit out, you retire. Well, that's not really smart on the Packers' fault, if you're the Packers, because if you do that, not only are you throwing away next year because you're not going to be any good, but you're also throwing away the opportunity to get some draft picks to help speed up your rebuild process, because somebody's going to give you quite a bit for Aaron Rodgers if you make him available. So I think the Packers have to make that decision in the next couple of weeks. And I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be gone. Honestly, where he goes, we'll have to see. But I do not think he'll be the quarterback in Green Bay next year. And I do think he still will play.
Yeah, I don't think he's not playing. I mean, he showed, I think, himself even that he still could play at the level of an MVP candidate, a guy that could take his team to the playoffs and really win games when need be. You just go back to what you said, though, about the fact that, you know, it kind of looked like he almost gave up in the past against the 49ers in the playoffs. When he did that, it was because they were losing. They were winning this game, and he didn't look interested in it. And that's the thing that really bothered me about it was, you know, I could understand in a sense if the 49ers came out and hung 21, 28 points on them and they were down 28 to 10 at some point. He just goes, well, screw it. We're just not coming back. The fact that they were winning 10-3 and he was kind of like, eh, whatever. And then obviously they get the block punt, they score a touchdown, and then they can't go down and score again. That's the worrisome part for me if I'm a Packers fan. And I think you're right. I think they're at the point where they're just done. Like, yes, you have an MVP type candidate, but if he really doesn't want to be there, why are you going to force him to be there anyway? So I do think he's going to be gone at some point. We're going to have a poll up on our page tomorrow about some of the destinations that we think, you know, Aaron Rodgers could go to. We'd like to get your guys' input on that as well. You know, where do you think Aaron Rodgers could go and what makes the most sense? So we'll have that up on the page tomorrow as well so you guys can vote on that. And that's going to be the offseason talk. We're going to get there in a couple weeks once the Super Bowl is over. I'm sorry, the big game is over. I want to get sued by the NFL. Jeez. So let's move on to some of the teams that might still be able to play in that big game. We got to move to the Sunday games. And you know, the first game, Bucks, Rams, looked like the Rams were just going to run away with that game. It was 27-3 at one point. And, you know, I messaged you right before Cam Akers fumbled at the end of the first half. And I was like, dude, this game's probably over. Like, the Rams were just running roughshod over Tampa Bay. And, you know, it looked like for all everybody was saying that Akers was going to go in, they were going to score a touchdown, they're going to be up huge at half. You said, hey, it's still early. And Cam Akers fumbles. The Rams don't score at the end of the first half. Then more turnovers happen. Cooper Kupp, who hadn't fumbled all year, fumbles the ball. The Bucks start scoring. Then you had that wild sequence where the Bucks forced the Rams 3-and-out. 9 seconds came off the clock. Very first play of that Bucks drive. Von Miller comes around, strip sacks Tom Brady. Rams get the ball in Bucks territory. Very next play, the Rams snap it over Matthew Stafford's head and the Bucks recover. And I don't think the Bucks ended up scoring off of that, but
they didn't.
Like that sequence of events was just a microcosm of that game. The Bucs ended up coming back, tying that game up, and then for some reason, and I don't understand it, Cooper Kupp was left wide open on two straight plays, essentially. Makes two huge catches. One of those, roughly 45 minutes around 45 minutes before another Ram-led receiver made a big catch against the Bucs, put the Rams into field goal territory. And Matt Gay, who had missed a 47-yard attempt earlier short, comes in and kicks the game-winning field goal, the third game to end on a last-second kick. I mean, that was just an insane type of game. You thought the wild swings back and forth, the comeback by the Bucs, an almost miracle comeback, and then the Rams winning on, you know, literally the last few seconds of the game. That was an insane game. And you look at it now and you go, well, who stepped up more? Was it the fact that Matthew Stafford actually stepped up and finished a game in the playoffs? Was it the fact that Tom Brady can still do what he does and lead his team to a comeback? You know, who stepped up and who really kind of let themselves down in that game?
Well, you got to give Matthew Stafford a ton of credit, because people have been ripping Matthew Stafford since the playoffs started. You know, he's going to be the one that can't handle the pressure. You know, he can't win the big game. Matthew Stafford played almost a perfect game yesterday. You know, he really did. He looked amazing. He played really well against Arizona last week. So I think that monkey's off Matthew Stafford's back now. I think people are going to start giving him some credit. You have to say, you know, he really stepped up and proved himself to be the quarterback that the Rams thought they were getting when they went out and made that trade. Tom Brady, again, like I said in that post to you, it's early. It's Brady out there. You know, the guy didn't play good for the first half. You know, he did well first three quarters for the most part. Not his fault. I mean, he was getting hit on every play.
He got a little bit bloody lip.
Yeah, he got jacked in the head. How the refs didn't call a penalty on that, I'll never understand. And then Tom gets the first personal foul on his 20-year career called on him. That's when I was like, okay, is the NFL trying to let the Rams win this game right here? But, you know, then Tom, you know, like we've seen him do so many times, he was Tom, you know, and I was screaming. You talked about that series of events, the turnovers, when the ball went back and forth. There were two possessions there that the Bucs went for it on fourth down and didn't get it. Both of those, I'm screaming, kick the field goal, kick the field goal. Because I knew, you know, even though they were so far down, you kick those two field goals at that point in time, they win that game last night.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I understand if you're looking at it, you know, and you're looking at the numbers, it tells you to go for it there. But I'm always going to kick the field goal in those spots just because you never know what could happen. And we saw it play out yesterday. And then going back to the end of that game, to have the joy and see that crowd go nuts when you get into the end zone, when Fournette crosses the goal line and gets that game tied, to go from that to 20 seconds later watching Cooper Kupp run down the middle of the field, for Tampa's defense to be so out of sync, and they were, as Rondale White, the middle linebacker, was supposed to blitz on that second play, and if you watch the replay, he blew his cover. I mean, he's standing in the middle of the field just kind of looking around because he realized, oh, crap, I just totally blew this, and that's my guy running down the middle of the field right now. If I didn't blitz, you know, he didn't do either one, didn't cover, didn't blitz, just kind of, I don't know what happened, you know, and Todd Bowles and Bruce Arians kind of said that after the game, you know, that was a blitz and most of our defense knew that. How your middle linebacker doesn't know what's called there because he's normally the field general. He normally calls all the coverages, calls all the plays. So I'm not sure how that happened, but you know, if he blitzes there, chances are Matthew Stafford does not get that last throw off to Cooper Kupp. It's a lot harder to get that throw off than it was. But, you know, it is what it is. And the Rams, you got to give them credit. You know, what they fumbled five times, and still found a way to win the game. And that Rams defensive line is scary, man. When you have Aaron Donald and all of a sudden Von Miller's found the fountain of youth, and, you know, they're putting tons of pressure on Brady. It's not going to be fun for Jimmy G next week either.
It really isn't. That's an NFC West battle for the championship next week is we're going to see the 49ers and the Rams matchup. Yeah, Jimmy G is not really going to get much time. Now, the thing of it is the 49ers have beaten the Rams twice this year, so they do have the Rams number. But you also look at it and you go, how many times do you see teams play each other three times and a team get a sweep? So in this moment and with it being in LA, which although they tried to prevent 49ers fans from buying tickets, it looks like Ticketmaster today rescinded that restriction. So 49ers fans are probably going to be flooding LA to take up those seats. And, you know, no amount of begging by Rams players or their wives to not sell tickets to 49ers fans, there's going to be a lot of Niners fans in the stands on Sunday for sure in LA.
Oh, yeah, no. And that back and forth was amazing, too, because, you know, it was Matthew Stafford's wife and Cooper Kupp's girlfriend and somebody else that were tweeting saying, you know, please, Rams fans, don't sell your tickets to 49ers players or to 49ers fans. Some of the 49er players were responding and saying, we'll buy the tickets, sell them to us. We'll buy them all. We'll give them to our fans. We'll make it worth your while. So, I mean, yeah, for the 49ers to end up being a six seed? They could legitimately end up playing these last two playoff games as home games because the NFC Championship game and if they would advance the Super Bowl would both almost be home games for the Niners
with their fans. That'd be crazy. And the fact that Jimmy G would be the one that would lead them to that, I don't think anything really any 49ers fan expected when this season started. That would be absolutely insane if that were to be the case. And we'll preview these games a little bit later on in the week so that you guys can prepare yourselves for the games on Sunday. But we got to talk about the game on Sunday. And if you thought the three games prior were crazy, if you thought the back and forth and the wild swings in that Bucks Rams game were anything, you better have taken your heart attack medicine on Sunday night because the Bills Chiefs game statistically and visually may have been one of the most perfect and beautiful playoff games I've ever seen. The back and forth, the perfection between Allen and Mahomes, everything added up to just be a classic game, and that's what we got. And you know, people are going to talk about the overtime rules and the fact that the Bills maybe should have gotten an opportunity to answer what Kansas City did after winning the toss. You know, that's a conversation for another day and another time. And I think you got to take yourself out of this moment before you have that conversation because. You don't put 13 seconds on the clock and make it and have a team go 45, 50 yards down the field to kick a game tying field goal. Prevent defense is exactly what it says. It prevents championships. And that's exactly what the Bills played. But before we get to that, you got to talk about just the shootout between Mahomes and Allen. I mean, they just were going back and forth. They were making throws that shouldn't be made. Their completions were being made. The fact that a guy basically made his name with four touchdown receptions in that game for the Bills. I mean, it was just an insane game and one that was incredibly fun to watch.
Just think about that. 42-36 Bills Chiefs. Stephon Diggs had three catches for 7 yards. I mean, if I told you that, you would have thought that the Chiefs would have blown the Bills out by 30.
Oh, but yeah.
No, it was an unbelievable game. And you didn't even have to watch the whole game. If you tuned in with a minute and 55 seconds left, you saw three games worth of action in that time period. Yeah, just unbelievable, like you said. I mean, to go back and forth the way they did, and both of those guys, I mean, you know, Josh Allen's gotten so much crap. You know, he got drafted, and people were like, oh, he's a big arm, and he's this, and he's that, and he's not going to win anything. He's not any good. You know, why'd the Bills draft this kid? Even after last year, when he got to the AFC Championship game and they lost, yeah, he's okay, but I'm not sure he's ever going to be that next-level quarterback. Josh Allen's not far behind Patrick Mahomes.
No.
Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league. Josh Allen's a step behind him, if that. I mean, he's a freak athlete. The fact that he, as big as he is, as fast as he is, that he can take the pounding. I mean, you look at Josh Allen, and he's built in a lot of ways like Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, he's that big. He's got speed he's more chiseled than Roethlisberger was. Ben was just big. Allen's more athletic, and he's got that speed that you don't see coming. And then, you know, to have that combination of size and speed and to be able to make the throws, I mean, nobody as good as Patrick Mahomes is with the deep ball, Josh Allen might be better. You know, and to see them go back and forth the way they did and have guys step up, I mean, you know, again, you know, most of that game you didn't hear a whole lot from Tyreek Hill. and Travis Kelce till the big moments, and those guys step up all of a sudden and make big plays down the stretch. Patrick Mahomes made a couple of throws. I mean, the one where he like twisted around and I don't even know how he saw the receiver and just kind of heaved it into the end zone to Pringle. I mean, most guys can't do that. He threw one sidearm that, you know, Dan Quisenberry or Kent Colby would have been proud of and threw a strike. I mean, the stuff that he can do, different arm angles, is unbelievable. Watching the two of them go back and forth, you just had to feel bad for Buffalo and Bills Nation because Bills Mafia, I should say. Sorry, Bills Nation's not correct. It is Bills Mafia. You feel bad for them because they deserve to be playing in a championship game because that team is that talented. And it's going to be fun for the next 10 or 15 years to watch these teams go back and forth.
Oh, and not just these two teams. I mean, the championship game between the Chiefs and the Bengals is going to be another great game because you've got Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase that can put up a bunch of points as well. And you know, the Bengals have Joe Mixon too, so they got a running game. I mean, if we thought the Bills were built to beat the Chiefs, and I think they are still maybe one little piece away from being a team that can officially beat them, I think you'd be surprised that I think the Bengals might be a little bit ahead of the Bills when it comes to the pieces that are needed because they've got a running game, they've got two wide receivers in Chase and Higgins, and their defense is very solid. Now, the Bills did possess the number one defense in the league this year, so their defense is really, really good. But when you've got an offense that can control the ball like the Bengals have the potential to do, I think a lot of people are going to overlook the Bengals in this game, and I would not be shocked if the Bengals shocked the world.
The Bengals could give the Chiefs a game. The thing that I'll argue with you with them being ahead of the Bills, they have no offensive line. They're going to get Joe Burrow hurt. Yeah. You know, he got sacked more than anybody else in the league this year.
Nine times in the game against Tennessee.
Well, and you know, I screamed during the draft. How in the world do you not draft a tackle? You know, they're going to get him hurt, you know, and you've got to fix it. Well, they have. Yeah. You know, they're lucky that he's able to play this year and bounce back as quickly as he did. You know, you've got to fix that offensive line. And that's the one thing. This Chiefs defense is not great, but they can get pressure on the quarterback. And, you know, it would not surprise me at all if the Chiefs have 7, 8, 9 sacks against Burrow. The big question for the Chiefs and the Chiefs Nation, you've got to be praying that Tyrann Mathieu is back. Yeah. Because if Mathieu is not out there, you're in big, big trouble. Because we saw the Chiefs struggle with that Bengals wide receiver core in Cincinnati about a month ago. You know, they just weren't able to cover those guys. And you've got to have Mathieu back. You've got to be able to get pressure on Burrow. And those will be the two big keys. And I think you're right. You know, I've heard a lot of people today say, oh, the Bengals have no chance. Don't overlook them. It's going to be a good game. It very well could be another 42-36 type game. It wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, I don't think the Bengals will actually win the game, but this could be another big time epic game like this game that we saw against the Bills. So that's going to be an amazing game. I know Chiefs Nation is going to be out in force. It's going to be another one of those just magical games at Arrowhead Field. What is it? GEHA Stadium or it's something Arrowhead. Like it's, that. It's Arrowhead to me too. It is Arrowhead. So yeah, plenty of time to talk about the championship games, and they're going to be a lot of fun. Make sure you check those out. And just a quick update on this Blues game. Not going well. 5-1 Calgary in the second period. The Blues have a total of 8 shots in the entire game. So, you know, no matter who you have in net, when you're getting outshot 31-8, you're not going to win many games. So, we'll probably steer clear of the Blues for the most part the rest of this show, but we'll keep you updated. Maybe they make a comeback. Who knows? They've got 15 comebacks on the year this year, so it's not out of the realm of possibility, but no. 8 shots. Yikes. We got to talk about Major League Baseball because you're wearing the Cardinals shirt. You were hesitant to even put on any Major League Baseball apparel until this whole thing was over and done with. And really, since the lockout began, we've had one meeting per se. That was about 11 days ago, kind of a preliminary get together between the league and the Players Association. Well, today they met again. Four representatives got together, and kind of started discussing frameworks and things like that. The players union put out a proposal, and you know, it obviously wasn't going to be a proposal that the league accepted, but it was something in the way of the union saying, this is what we want. Well, those talks, they bore fruit a little bit. They're setting things up nicely, because the two are going to meet again tomorrow. And this is, it's consecutive days, two in a row. It's not something we've seen them do in a very, very long time. Talk a little bit about, you know, what went down in today's meeting and what that kind of means going forward for these talks and the hopes of having a normal season.
Well, I mean, like you said, just the fact that they were actually in a room, and they weren't there for 10 minutes or 20 minutes. They actually spent 2 hours in a room talking today, and both sides made some concessions. Major League Baseball, the Players Union kind of went down on their request for free agency, you know, extending that out. So that's kind of gone down. They're kind of changing their ideas on that. Owners are kind of talking about how they're going to concede some different things financially to players. You know, talking about, they're starting to work on talking about the framework of how, you know, the clock starts with minor leaguers when they come up, how you do that, you know, as you start to lead into free agency and arbitration and all those years. So they're starting to work on those things. Just to hear the fact that both sides are willing to sit down and talk and start to agree to some things and say, okay, let's take this off the table for now. You take that off the table for now. You know, let's work on this. Let's see if we can agree on these things. And the fact that they're going to sit down for 2 days in a row, I mean, you know, that's just exciting in itself. And, you know, I think both sides realize, oh, crap, the end of this week, we're into February. You know, we got to get this thing done, because pitchers and catchers are supposed to be in spring training 3 weeks from today. So, yeah, you've got to start getting the ball rolling, because we still have, what, 185 players that are free agents, something along those lines. You got to get players from other countries to get their visas and get everything figured out so they can get back in the country. There's a lot of work to do. And, you know, I'm not saying that we're going to have an agreement tomorrow. But like I told you, if they can sit down tomorrow and talk for a little bit, and, you know, hopefully you can get something ironed out, you know, maybe by the end of the week or the first part of next week, so that then, you know, maybe by the middle of next week you can start free agency, get that knocked out. Then all of a sudden, you know, because that free agency thing is going to be crazy. I mean, 185 players still don't know where they're going to go. And we're talking big names like Carlos Correa and Trevor Story and, you know, some huge players out there. So that's all going to take a little bit of time. But, you know, it's definitely a step in the right direction. I'm feeling pretty good about it. From everything I've heard, all the insiders feel good. You know, nobody's saying, oh, it's a done deal, we're going to be playing baseball tomorrow. But it's definitely, for the first time in a long time, a step in the right direction. And, you know, I was starting to get worried. I was starting to think, oh, man, spring training's not going to start. Is the season going to start on time? You know, we were hearing people say, oh, you know, hopefully maybe they'll have something lined up by March 1st, you know, which that would have really, you know, that would have, spring training would have been a couple of weeks, basically, and then you would have been trying to do a season, and that wouldn't have been good for anybody. You know, we've seen what happens when you try to shorten spring training, and pitchers don't necessarily look great. And so hopefully this bears fruit, and in a week or so we're talking about an agreement, and we can start talking about some positive things, like who the Cardinals are going to sign, which brings me to something that I haven't even told you about yet.
Oh, snap.
I had a conversation today with a reliable source. I can't say who it is because it would get me in trouble. But I had a conversation today with a reliable source that told me, and this will excite some Cardinal fans, it will not excite some other Cardinal fans, that a certain free agent that we know very well in St. Louis is very much hoping that the designated hitter comes to the National League, because his goal is to retire a St. Louis Cardinal. If the National League doesn't get the DH, he would probably sign in the American League for only a contender. If a team like the Tigers or the Royals or somebody like that offered him a deal, he doesn't want to play just to play, that he would retire. So basically it comes down to, I want to play in St. Louis if there's a DH. If not, I want to play for a contending team in the American League. Otherwise, I hang it up. But, yeah, like I said, I heard that from a reliable source that Mr. Pujols would love to finish his career in St. Louis. And I told the person, I said, you know, I'd love that idea as long as he understands that he's a designated hitter and he plays against left-handed pitching. And, you know, maybe every once in a while against a righty, or maybe every once in a while fills in for Goldie at first base against a lefty if Goldie needs a day off. But as long as, you know, they're not trying to play him 162 games, which I don't think they'll do. I think he understands that at this point too. But, you know, just a little insight that I got today that maybe Mr. Pujols does get to have that one last ride with Yadi and Waino.
I mean, that's, I think, what every St. Louis Cardinals fan is secretly hoping for. I mean, there's a lot that aren't. Well, no, there aren't. No, they definitely are. Like, I'll say this. I think even the most hardened anti-Albert people, if you were to tell them that guaranteed that he comes back for 1 year and he, Yadi, and Waino lead this team to a World Series championship, I think they would be like, I'll take it. Storybook ending. No question. It's the uncertainty. It's the, okay, he's old. He's only going to be a DH. He can't play the field per se. I think that's what a lot of the people that don't want that to happen are really saying. I mean, I get it. It's a fair assessment. He's definitely gone south since he left here, and it's got to deal with age and injury and all that kind of stuff. But if you were to be able to guarantee that they'd have one final ride and it would end in a championship, I'd have to say at least 80% of Cardinals fans who like it or not would be happy with that outcome and would say, yes, we will sign Albert Pujols for one more year.
Can you imagine how magical it would be if you got into July or August and that team is in a pennant race and Albert hits his 700th home run at Busch Stadium? What that moment would be like?
That would be electric. I mean, it would. It would just be one of those things that would once again cement St. Louis as the ultimate baseball town. And the fans would show him as much respect and love as they did when he won his first MVP or when they won the World Series with him the first time. I mean, it would just be incredibly magical. And let's take it a step further, okay? Let's say that all this happens. And then they do win the World Series. You know, we talk about how amazing that blue Stanley Cup parade was. That St. Louis Cardinals one would be probably the greatest parade in the history of parades.
Well, you think about the DH, and while I would love to have Kyle Schwarber or one of those guys, if the Cardinals aren't going to spend the money to do that, if they're determined that they're going to spend their money on pitching, you know, Albert's not going to cost you a whole lot of money. And then if you want one of those young kids to get the chance to be the DH, whether it's, you know, Nolan Gorman or whoever, I mean, Gorman being the left-handed bat, Albert being the right-handed bat, splitting time at DH, Gorman hits against righties, Albert hits against lefties. And then you can move Gorman around different places and, you know, let him play some second base, do whatever. Or, you know, one of those other young kids that we've heard their names mentioned as potentially being DH candidates. I mean, who better to learn from if you're coming up in a kid and you're trying to learn something than to have the greatest right-handed hitter ever standing there talking to you, giving you tips. I mean, and that's not going to hurt Dylan Carlson or anybody else. And, you know, I mean, just imagine, I mean, we heard the love poured when he got released from the Angels for Albert, from guys like, of course, Yadi and Waino, but then Goldie and Arenado. Imagine looking at the dugout and imagine being a Dylan Carlson or a Tyler O'Neill or a Harrison Bader, and you're standing around and you're getting hitting tips from Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt, and Albert Pujols. I mean, how does that not – just having him around, how does that not make your ball club better?
It does. I mean, you talk about the young kids that would be able to learn from him. I still think you look at – and a guy like Nolan Arenado would still want to learn from him. You heard the conversation that he had when he was released. Nolan Arenado wanted him over the summer. So – the excitement level that would be brought to St. Louis and to the team in itself would be just another reason why you would bring him back in. But it does have to be the right situation. You have to have the DH. Now, the DH, that wasn't the talk that came up during today's meetings, at least to my knowledge, as far as what was kind of discussed back and forth. It's probably part of the proposal, but not anything that really got any of the news. You talked a little bit about what was offered. You know, the union dropped their request for age-based free agency, which would have allowed some players to become eligible for free agency before their 6 years. Revenue sharing to small market teams, the players union, you know, offered a significant cut to that, $100 million for small market teams. Baseball said, hey, you know what? Since you're willing, we'll just do the 30. So, you know, there's a little bit of give and take there. Now, the union still rejected some proposals from the from that meeting about 11 days ago. Formula-based salary systems, a draft pick reward for guys that are on the opening day roster, draft lottery potential, all that kind of stuff was rejected. But the DH wasn't really mentioned. And, I mean, we talk as if it's a foregone conclusion that it's going to happen. But the fact that we're not hearing it mentioned in any of these conversations, at least what's being put out there, is it because it is a foregone conclusion, or are we way off base and maybe it's not even something that's important to either league?
No, it's a foregone conclusion. Both sides want it. You know, the owners want it. The players want it. The players want it because it creates more jobs for guys. You know, it gives guys the opportunity to play longer. Like guys like Nelson Cruz, guys like Albert Pujols, it gives them more opportunities to play. You know, it creates more jobs for players. You know, and the owners want it in a certain extent too because they realize that it brings more excitement to the game. You don't have watching pitchers swing and drill themselves in, screw themselves into the ground, spin around in a circle at home plate. So it's a foregone conclusion. Whether you really want it or not, it's going to happen. You know, that's one of the things that's a for sure thing. So, you know, Cardinal fans will get used to it. I mean, we saw it during the shortened year 2 years ago, and nobody really complained once they watched it. I mean, you know, it's just another opportunity for more offense. You know, you'll get used to it, and, you know, after a few months, you'll forget that you're even seeing something different. So.
And the American League teams will still be ahead of the National League teams for 5, 6, 7 years, probably, because they have been, you know, building that into their mindset for so long. And obviously you've got guys like Cruz and Pujols out there that will make an impact on the National League with the DH, but it is going to take a little bit of an adjustment period for National League clubs to really figure out how they want to make it work. And you look at the Cardinals and you say, okay, any of the teams that are out there outside of a few, they are pretty well set up to just seamlessly roll into that DH spot. You talk about the Nolan Gormans, you talk about some of these other guys that are down in the minors, that spot fits them very, very well. So as a Cardinal fan, like you said, you may not like it because you like the tradition. You like the seeing pitchers hit. I mean, even Adam Wainwright really wants to hit, but not every pitcher can hit like an Adam Wainwright could hit. The Cardinals are well set up to be successful in a DH-led National League. So you may not like it, but don't worry because the Cardinals are going to be set up okay.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, I'm excited. That's what I said. I'm excited to see to get this done because I'm excited to see what additions this team makes to this ball club because, you know, we got Steven. People forget we added Steven Matz already. You know, that was a big move that they made in November, but there's still some holes on this ball club. You know, whether you go get a bat or a bench bat or a couple of relievers or who knows, maybe a starter. I mean, there's a lot of ways this team can still go to make this team better. But I'm excited, and it's going to be fun to get going. And before we move out of baseball talk and head in another direction, we got to remember, too, everybody be thinking tomorrow the Major League Baseball announces the finalists announces the people that got into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. So tomorrow could very well be a big day for the great Scott Rowland. Let's all hope that Scotty gets in tomorrow. If he doesn't tomorrow, I think he gets in next year. But let's hope it's tomorrow's big day for Mr. Rowland.
Well, after the controversy on Twitter with baseball Hall of Fame ballots, I don't know. It's going to be real interesting to see what kind of number he gets. Because if you're not on Twitter, you're probably good because it's a cesspool of just negativity, but there's a lot of really big information that goes down on Twitter as well. You know, Mark Saxon and a couple other guys. It's just been a really interesting couple of months with the lockout being in place and not having other baseball content to talk about, that we are really focused on Hall of Fame ballots and what people are doing. And that whole system is, I think, still kind of somewhat broken in a sense. And it's not going to get fixed anytime soon, but it does hurt guys like a Scott Rowland. I mean, you start comparing statistical information for people, and, you know, if you're going to make an argument that a player doesn't deserve to be in because of his outside of baseball persona but then you also aren't going to elect a guy that has the statistics that are better than guys that are in the Hall of Fame that maybe had bad outside personas. It's a really, really archaic system and something I think definitely needs to be looked at, but won't be because people are still stuck in their ways, especially in baseball. So I'm hoping Roland gets in because I think he definitely deserves it. I mean, the fact that he was for so long compared to the great Mike Schmidt and in some cases surpassed Mike Schmidt in instances and even got compared to Brooks Robinson. He's a guy that deserves to be in. And if not for that shoulder injury, I think it would have been a shoe-in. But I think he did enough in his career to warrant going in.
Yeah, Tim. I heard Tim Kirchner today say he was the third best third baseman that he's ever seen. Brooks Robinson, Nolan Arenado, Scott Rolen, the three best that he's ever seen in his lifetime.
And the Cardinals had two of them.
Yep. The last thing that I saw, it was last week, Rolen had about, of the votes that were in, he was at about 72.3%, which you need 75 to get in. So he's right there knocking on the door. If he doesn't get in this year, he would probably get in next year.
That's a big-time hope. Let's hope that's the case because I'd love to see what his speech ends up being because that could be a very, very fun one for sure.
It's interesting. Scotty's got a really dry sense of humor.
Yep.
So, yeah, that could be really interesting.
He fits the Midwest persona very, very well. So
he definitely does, Midwest boy.
That he is. All right, let's jump over to college basketball because we've got a lot of positive and negative here in the area when it comes to college basketball. I mean, let's start a little bit. Let's start with the negative so we can end this on a high note because that's what we talked about at the beginning of the show. The high notes of the weekend of getting us happy and ecstatic. You got to first talk if you're going to talk negative about the Mizzou men's basketball team. 8-10 on the year. They're 10th in the SEC. Lost to Alabama on Saturday. They blew two double-digit leads against a team that they had already beaten earlier this year. Granted, that was at home. This was on the road. And Alabama is a tough place to play. They've got number one Alabama coming to town tomorrow. They're about ready to match up against number 19 Iowa State later on this week as well. Not a great schedule for the week for Mizzou. It's going to be a tough one. I mean, what is there to say about this team? It's a team that is consistently has a revolving door of transfers in and out. No consistency. I mean, what is there to say about this team?
There's really not a whole lot to say. I mean, it's a mediocre team with mediocre talent. I mean, you hate to say it like that, but it's the truth. You know, and you look, and I think that's the thing you have to say about Konzo. Everybody talks about, well, you know, he's a great guy and, you know, he's a pretty good coach. But look at what has Konzo recruited as the head coach at Mizzou? I mean, yeah, he got Michael Porter Jr. to come in, but he was a family friend. Other than that, what has he done? And I mean, there's nothing when you look down the hallway at what's coming in the next year or two, there's nothing there. I mean, there is nothing to get you excited about this basketball program. And, you know, that's a shame because this team was a national power for a long, long time. And to see where it is right now, it's pretty sad. And like I said, you just don't see, there's not a whole lot of hope with this program right now.
So is Coach Martin got another year out of this? Is he moving on after this? I mean, what does your gut say? I mean, obviously the coaching cycle is getting ready to flip because you've got Krzyzewski retiring. You've got guys like Bill Self that are maybe nearing potentially the end of their careers. Who could possibly come here? I mean, you hear the name Kim English a lot. I don't think he's leaving where he's at anytime soon, especially to come to a program that's kind of in shambles right now. But does Martin get another year, or are we looking at another coaching search in Mizzou's future? And if that's the case, who could they even target?
I think he's probably got another year because of the money that you still owe him, unfortunately. The guy that it has to be, and you just said his name, the guy that has to be the next coach at Mizzou is Kim English because, you know, he is an up-and-rising star in the college basketball world. He loves Mizzou. He bleeds black and gold. He talks about the Mizzou program constantly. I do think that if Mizzou came to him and offered him the job, I think he would jump at it. You know, and I think he could recruit here because I think he could talk to kids about, you know, the heyday when he was here, the tradition that he grew up watching at Mizzou, and then being a part of. So I think he would be a guy that could recruit and could sell Mizzou and what Mizzou was and could be again. So I think Kim English is the perfect guy. And he's got a little bit of Norm in him. You know, he was around the very end of Norm Stewart and then got Quinn Snyder. And so, and as much as you may not like Quinn Snyder is a very good coach.
Yep.
So he got those things from those guys. And I think he would be the right answer at Mizzou. I think he would be the perfect fit.
I would love to see him here, and I hope that is the direction that they go. It'll be real interesting to see how they go about playing this out, because a lot of Mizzou fans are ready for a successful basketball team, because, you know, with Mizzou football kind of being near the cusp of being great, dare I say, with Coach Drink, you got to have a basketball program that will equal that as well. And, you know, you don't see that a whole lot in the SEC, where you have equally good football and basketball programs. And if Mizzou is able to do that, that would put them near the upper echelon of the SEC. Because, I mean, you look at what Texas A&M has that. I think they have a very good football and basketball program. Outside of that, can you name another SEC program? Maybe LSU right now, but LSU's football is down a little bit. Are there any other – who? Bama? Well, yeah, Bama's up there. Yeah, you got to say that, because they have been near the top of the SEC in basketball the last few years. So, I mean, you've got three – if you can be that fourth program to really put a stranglehold on football and basketball, that'd be huge with, you know, Texas and Oklahoma potentially coming in here in the next couple of years. If you can solidify that – that would be a big, big play for Mizzou going forward, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be easy, because, like you said, you got those two schools coming in. And then, you know, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee all have their runs where they're really good for 3 or 4 years, and then they go down for a couple of years in basketball, and then they're right back. And, you know, all of those football programs are going to be there. So, you know, it's not going to be easy to have dominant programs in both sports. You know, when you think about it, it's funny now. When Mizzou went to the SEC, what did everybody say? Oh, man, the basketball program is going to dominate. The football program is going to have a hard time. Well, that totally got flipped. At least Mizzou women's basketball is pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, actually, that was going to be one of the positive things we were going to talk about, because, you know, you may not have some hope in the men's side of things, but the women's side has been very, very good this year. 15-5 overall. They're 6 in the SEC. Now, they have been a little bit down the last couple weeks. They're 7-3 in their last 10. That includes that upset of number one South Carolina. That was an epic game. And if you didn't get a chance to watch that one, find a replay, because that's incredible. You know, they had a stretch here against LSU and Georgia, both ranked teams that they ended up losing to, but they are playing very, very well right now. 2 straight wins. Asia and East, 9 straight games with a double-double. It's an underrated team. People are overlooking this Mizzou Women's Tigers basketball team. And once again, if you're not happy with what you're seeing on the men's side, get out there and support the women, because they have a chance. They have a chance of making the NCAA tournament this year. And that would be pretty fun to see them in there and maybe make a bit of a run.
Yeah, they could. They could definitely get out and support them, because they are fun to watch.
That they are. And another team locally that's doing very, very well, SLU, the men's basketball team, 12-6, 5th in the A-10. I don't think they're where we thought they were going to be. They've had some injuries. They've had some postponements. Nothing too crazy like last year where they went a whole month without playing. They've alternated wins and losses their last 5 games. So a little bit of inconsistency to start 2022. But Gibson Jimerson leading the A-10 in scoring this year, 321 points. Yes, that's only 2 more than the person behind him. But still, Jimerson leading the way. He's been their top performer their last 4 games. And they got a big game coming up against GW on Wednesday at Chaffetz, a team that's behind them in the standings right now, one of those teams that you have to take advantage of and beat to if you want to contend for an A-10 title this year. But SLU, once again, kind of quietly going about their business, and a team that more than likely this year is going to have to make a big-time run in the A-10 tournament. But there's still a lot of basketball to play. They still may end up near the top.
Yeah, I think they will. I think they'll get there. I think they'll get to the NCAA tournament this year. Like you said, Gibson Jimerson having a great year. You know, and then when your point guard, he's 2nd in the country in assists right now. When you have a point guard averaging almost 8 assists a game, you know, that's pretty impressive. And he's starting to score a little bit too. And local kid went to St. Mary's. So that's good to see. Jimerson, watching Jimerson shoot threes. He was on fire last night. He had 8 threes in that game last night. You know, and you got to remember that they lost their best player right before the season started with an Achilles injury. So you know, they're bouncing back. Coach Ford has done a good job. I think they will get to the top of the A-10. You know, whether they win it or not, I don't know, but I think they'll be one of those top two or three teams. And then I think they'll make a little bit of noise in the big tournament. I really do.
Well, and we got to give credit to a former colleague of ours who propped up Yuri Collins for the last couple of years. Good call on that one. I'm glad to see that he actually bore fruit and is doing what he's doing this year. So it's really always a good thing to see local products, you know, producing at a good on a big stage and doing well. So nice to see Collins doing what he's doing there. And another local team, once again, Illinois, playing very, very well. Except the last two games. They've lost two big time games, including one against Maryland that at the time was 1-6 in conference play. But still, Illinois 13-5 this year. They're 24th in the country, ranked second in the Big Ten. The big thing, though, and this is huge considering number 10 and Big Ten leader Michigan State's going to be here tomorrow. Kofi Cockburn is out with concussion, and they're not sure when he's coming back. And that is a huge, huge loss for Illinois because Maryland took advantage. A Maryland team that was desperate for a win was able to take advantage and pretty handily handled the Fighting Illini. If Cockburn's out for a significant amount of time, could this maybe push Illinois out of the NCAA tournament?
I don't know if it pushes them out of the tournament. They may be a high seed. He'll be back at some point, you know, and they'll be dominant when he comes back. But yeah, it could hurt their seeding in the tournament. Could hurt their seeding in the Big Ten tournament. But he will be back at some point, and they will still be a force before the season's over. But that's definitely been the reason they've been on a little losing skid here the last couple of days.
Yeah, they had the double overtime loss to Purdue, and then a loss to Maryland. But before that, they had won, I think, about seven straight. They were playing very, very well at a high level. And it does show you how important one player can be in college basketball. But I think Illinois will kind of be able to figure it out. It may not happen tomorrow night against Michigan State. If it does, watch out, because that will put Illinois at the top of the Big Ten, because Michigan State's 6-1, Illinois is 6-2 in the Big Ten right now. So it is a big-time game tomorrow night. So if you got a chance to watch it, definitely, you know, take a gander at it. Find out how Illinois does against Michigan State. Should still be a pretty fun game to watch for sure.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're missing one of your biggest stars, it's a blow. When you're missing one of your biggest stars and he's a 7-footer in the middle of the court that isn't there, that's a huge presence to try to replace.
I don't know very many 7-footers, but I can imagine it would definitely alter a game plan for any sort of team whatsoever. All righty. Well, like I said, plenty of positive talk tonight. We've got the NFL championship game set up. You've got the Bengals and the Chiefs, and you've got the 49ers and the Rams. Like I said, we'll discuss this a little bit later in the week and kind of give you our picks as we go about, because both of our Super Bowl – well, I think you have the Chiefs in as your Super Bowl champ. So your Super Bowl champ is still alive. Plenty of action there. Hopefully by the end of this week, we have some resolution in the Major League Baseball lockout. Talks are progressing. 2 days in a row, they're going to talk. We won't talk much about the Blues, the fact that they're down 7-1 going into the third period. Yikes, 8 shots. Oh, I'm sorry. They're up to 10 shots on goal now. Congratulations.
You have to have a bad game every once in a while, man. You can't win them all.
You really do. You really do. And the fact that it's the second out of back-to-backs, I'll say this, it doesn't help the Bennington lovers in this game, although majority of the goals were not Bennington's fault tonight. The Bennington haters are going to have plenty of fuel for the fire when it comes to the next time Jordan Bennington gets a start, which will not be Thursday night. Ville Husso will definitely get the start against Calgary on Thursday night. He's undefeated at home this year, won 3 straight, 5-0-0 since coming back from his injury. So definitely going to see Ville Husso in net on Thursday for sure. But from there on out, it's going to be really interesting to see who gets the net. You've got Winnipeg on Saturday, and then you got a bit of a break because February was supposed to be the Olympics. Now it's makeup games. You're going to have games in the middle of February, a couple at home games, 4 games on the road. So once again, very interesting to see who gets the net for how long and if anybody can rebound. And you got the trade deadline coming up as well. So the NHL is about ready to get incredibly hot as well. So once again, plenty of stuff that we're going to be able to talk about here the next couple of weeks. And we talked about it before we came on. Hopefully, if this Major League Baseball thing gets resolved, you got resolution this weekend, championship games on Sunday, Major League Baseball free agency reopens on Monday. 2 weeks of that craziness. Super Bowl, spring training right after that. If you're a sports fan, that's your best possible outcome. Because then you got that, March Madness.
Yeah, that would make me happy. Because February is usually the longest month of the year for me. Because Super Bowl ends and then you're trying to get to spring training. And it seems like it takes forever to get to the end when games start and all that stuff. So if we could have free agency and everything go in and then pitchers and catchers be there and then games in a couple of weeks and then spring training games, March Madness, and then the season. So yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, we really – February is usually the shortest month but the longest month in a sports fan's life. So hopefully that is what happens there. All right, anything else before we head out tonight, Scott?
I think that was it. Good show, man. Good to be back together.
Good to be back for sure. For Scott Tobin, I am Wags. Thank you guys for joining us. Have a great night and have a great rest of your week. We'll see you guys a little bit later in the week ourselves. Till then, have a great night.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.